This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. As of this morning, Michigan's power providers had restored electricity to all but some 20,000 customers. That's down from well over 500,000 outages related to storms in southeast Michigan last Wednesday night and Thursday morning. Summer storms and power outages have always been part of life in Michigan. But changing climate has meant an acceleration of the natural forces that drive our weather. How are our systems keeping up? 800,000 residential power customers might say not so well. With us today for more is Dan Scripps. He's chair of the Michigan Public Service Commission and a former state lawmaker. And we're also speaking today with Charlotte Jamison. She's director of the Citizens Utility Board of Michigan and also program director at the Michigan Environmental Council. Charlotte, Dan, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks, April. It's great to be here.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dan, I think some of the shock is lifting as power comes back online to so many tens of thousands of people. But to channel the moment from last Friday, I guess, what just happened?
Yeah, I mean, I will say I've never seen a storm map look this way. We got a series of storms that passed through Michigan last week, really starting last Monday in the southwest part of the state. And then over the course of the week, there was almost nothing in the lower peninsula that wasn't impacted. And I think some of the number of outages and then the length of time it took to restore power to those who had lost power sort of speaks to that. But it also, I think, exposed some vulnerabilities in the grid. And we've taken some steps, but clearly we've got to do more and we've got to do it faster.
Charlotte, what kinds of calls has Citizens Utility Board been getting over the past few days?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of folks are understandably frustrated and concerned and curious about how we avoid lengthy power outages in the future. So that's really what groups on the ground have been hearing, is both sort of how we move things forward now to restore power, but also avoid these lengthy power outages going forward.
Yeah. Just for those who may not know about the Public Service Commission's work, Dan, again, this is regulatory authority over several different kinds of utilities, including electricity. You mentioned that some steps have already been taken. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, really. I mean, we've been looking at this for the better part of a decade. We had some severe storms in 2013 and then again in 2017. Mm-hmm. And after that, we adopted a number of measures, including approving a surge on tree trimming. And, you know, people sort of scoff at tree trimming sometimes, but trees continue to be the number one source of outages and really sort of improving our vegetation management practices. It's the sort of blocking and tackling, the nuts and bolts, if you will. But that was part of it. Also greater transparency around the utility distribution plans. DTE consumers in Indiana, Michigan just filed their second iteration of their five-year distribution plans this summer, looking at sort of what they plan to do in terms of grid hardening and conversion. And then it's really sort of updating our service quality rules and our technical standards, everything from shortening the number of repeated outages before you're eligible for a credit to increasing the amount of the credits and making them automatic. There's efforts that we can do on the regulatory side to make sure that, you know, when folks lose power, that they have something that they some recognition of that from the utilities, but also making sure that we're putting into the investments in tree trimming and grid hardening to reduce the number of outages and reduce the frequency of outages.
Yeah. What are some of the metrics that you think of for figuring out how well companies like consumers and DTE did when it comes to those outages, like how hard our grid is right now?
Yeah, there are some sort of industry-wide metrics around the frequency of outages, the duration of outages, the customers experiencing multiple outages. And those are really some of the metrics that we're including. But I'll say that we've got work to do here. It's one of the reasons that in the most recent rate cases for both consumers and DTE, we told them as part of the distribution plans that they filed this summer to include metrics around grid performance, distribution performance, number and duration of outages, and then to start putting in some financial pieces to that so that there will be maybe an upside if they can make real improvement, but also that they're held accountable financially if we continue to see sort of poor reliability on the system.
Charlotte, do you think incidents like we've experienced in the past week should affect rate cases for our power utilities in the future? Or do you consider this an outlier?
No, I 100% think that we should be taking these sorts of storms and these sorts of events into account when we're setting rates, and more critically, when we're determining the profit of regulated utilities. I mean, I think the critical thing to note is that for both DT and consumers, you know, they're monopoly utilities, they're regulated by the state, and they're guaranteed a profit. And the way that profit motive is set up is it's really based on kind of capital intensive projects. And so utilities are incentivized to invest tons of money into kind of capital projects, replacing poles and wires, utility generation plants, those sorts of things. And they're not incentivized to really look at maintenance of the grid. And so we'd really love to see our rate making system and our utility profit system move more towards what's called a performance-based system, where utilities are given a set of metrics. They can be based on reliability, on environmental, on a whole host of other things. And then their, you know, their profit is really tied into how well they are performing on those metrics, so that we're aligning utility incentive with actual performance. And I think if we move more in that direction, we would really see a better response, I think, in terms of how utilities are investing money into the grid to help avoid these long outages in the future.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are Charlotte Jamieson of the Citizens Utility Board of Michigan, and we're also talking with Dan Scripps. He's chair of Michigan's Public Service Commission. Dan, let's dig in a little bit more on that. Can we talk about what the bottleneck is in terms of tree trimming, which, as you say, like that's why we had power failures to the degree that we had. What exactly is the limiting factor in terms of companies maintaining the tree trimming that has to get done?
Well, I think there's a number of things, but I really do agree with Charlotte on this, that you know, often because tree trimming is a lot of operations and maintenance where utilities don't necessarily earn a profit, it's the first thing to go when budgets get looked at. And it was because of that, that in 2019 for DTE and then for consumers as well, in approving their rate cases, we sort of lockboxed that money and said, you're going to be able to recover the dollars that you're spending on tree trimming in a way that was beneficial to customers, but we want to make sure that you're actually spending it on tree trimming. We've got to see the work actually get done and not simply rated sort of when budgets get tight. And we've seen real progress in that, but we've got a ways to go. The plan that we approved for DTE, for example, is a 7-year plan that will bring them into sort of compliance with some of the best practices in the industry by 2025. And for the circuits they've already trimmed, we're seeing better performance, fewer outages, shorter duration on the outages. But it really is sort of playing catch up from a number of years of neglect that we're experiencing today. And then the other piece, I think, is really sort of making sure that they stay on top of it, that once you get back into a cycle where every tree is being trimmed every 5 to 7 years, so you don't have that backlog, staying on top of it so that, and that's really, I think, what's going to move the needle. Unfortunately, there has not been the level of support in these programs historically, and I think we're playing catch up at this point, and we still have a ways to go as the storms this week showed.
I've heard from folks in the industry that it's difficult staffing tree trimming crews because it's not like starting a job in another sector where you show up to work and they put you on the floor, but that there's a certain amount of training. Dan, what do you know about the industry's ability to get the people they need? How long would it take? Are we talking a period of 10 years to clear the backlog?
No, it's a great question, April. I think we'll have cleared the backlog by 2025, but that workforce piece is a part of it. And it is a challenge. It is a bottleneck. I will say that I think that the utilities in Michigan have started to take steps. There's a program at the Parnell Correctional Facility, actually, for inmates within 6 months of parole. They can actually go to the vocational village, get some of the training that they need, and then they are essentially entered into an apprentice program with the IBEW, the electrical workers, upon their release. I think that's an innovative approach. We saw the Tree Trim Academy that was launched earlier this year in on the west side of the city of Detroit, in partnership with the city and the union, Focus Hope providing wraparound services. So I think there are efforts to address some of the worker shortages. And as we ramp up, you know, we're going to see more and more of that. And, you know, this isn't just a Michigan thing. I mean, one of the challenges here is that the tree trimmers that are out there, you know, there's with the wildfires on the West Coast and in California and Oregon, as you know, we're seeing sort of an increased demand all across the country for tree trimmers. And so these programs that really sort of bring people in from outside the industry, give them the training and the skills that they're going to need, I think are an important part of making sure that we're developing some of that homegrown talent so that we've got the workers to do the jobs that need to be done.
Charlotte, you mentioned that tying more funding to maintenance is going to be essential. What is the organ of that change? Is that something the legislature has to get involved with?
I think Chairman Scripps and others at the commission have been doing a really great job with the tools that they have to sort of move more in that direction and encourage utilities to really focus on maintenance and focus on sort of proactive grid work. And so I think there are, you know, tools in the toolbox that the commission has that they can continue to double down on. They're looking at the credit that customers who have been out of power for a long time get. And I think that's another kind of potential stick for pushing utilities in the right direction. But there's only so much that the commission can do, and it is a creature of what they're given in terms of statute to implement. And so I think there is really a great role for the legislature to play in terms of helping to move us in the right direction by passing legislation that would ensure that we are moving towards a performance-based rate-making system.
Dan Scripps, there's a question that I'm sure occurred to a lot of Michigan ratepayers over the past week. Why is it that in Michigan, and I guess we could say in most of the continental United States, we do not bury our power lines?
Yeah, we do have some lines that are buried in Michigan, but the truth is that particularly in less dense areas, it's really, really expensive, on an order of magnitude more expensive than the work that you can do to improve reliability simply by hardening the system that we have and making sure that we're addressing the tree trimming and vegetation management. The other piece of it is that it's not a fail-safe sort of path forward, that in cases like we had earlier this summer with significant flooding in Southeast Michigan, when you do get an outage with buried lines, that outage can take a lot longer to restore because you've got to get workers down into the underground facility. It's obviously got to be drained before they can do that from a safety perspective. It just takes longer. So there is no silver bullet here, but I think in some of the places that we've looked at it, we've found that the best value for customers in terms of improving the reliability, reducing the number and the frequency of outages, the customers experiencing multiple outages, is really through tree trimming and grid hardening.
You know, the climate is getting more hostile, not less so. And power is far from the only place where we're having infrastructure problems in Michigan right now. Charlotte, I know you have a little bit of expertise on water issues, and I wonder if we could broaden the conversation to what we need to think about as hopefully the federal government moves forward on the big infrastructure package. I mean, people right now kind of have the sense that the world is falling apart around them. What would you like to see prioritized as, you know, if there is money available in the billions over the next 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I think it's sort of two-pronged. We've seen recently with the International Panel on Climate Change report that we still have time to mitigate and to avoid even worse impacts, and that is so critical over the next few years that we really double down on cutting greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector, transitioning to renewable energy, transitioning to electric vehicles and other forms of non-motorized transit, really moving off of gas appliances in our buildings. All of these things are things that we have the technology to do and we need to be doing now. And the federal government has a huge role in terms of helping by providing funding and resources for states and people to move in that direction. So I think that's going to be key. The other side of the equation is we are experiencing the impacts of climate change right now, and we do need to adapt, and we do need to make sure that our infrastructure is resilient and is able to withstand these worse, more extreme flooding and rainstorm events that we're going to continue to see in Michigan and in the Midwest. And a huge part of that is investing in the grid, as we've been talking about. But another side of that is really doubling down and maintaining our water infrastructure. And that's another place where I think, you know, we've talked about being behind the eight ball on infrastructure maintenance. Well, on the water side, we're really behind the eight ball, and we've got a huge funding gap that, you know, local units of government have been trying desperately to kind of band-aid over the last several decades. But, you know, we need to really invest in terms of flooding mitigation and potentially even separating our stormwater and our sewer systems. And then green infrastructure is going to be key. We've got a lot of impervious surfaces, particularly in Southeast Michigan. And all of that is just exacerbating flooding. And if we could really get in there and do some more green infrastructure, I think we would see a lot better handling of the larger volumes of water that we're getting in the region.
Dan Scripps, it feels like we're entering some kind of period where the power companies and everyone else in America are in this reckoning. And there's a lot of discussion overall about how our existing institutions and infrastructure do or do not fit in with what the future has to look like if life on the planet's going to succeed. How do you think about priorities at this stage?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things that really sort of are spotlighted by the experience of the last week, but that have really global significance. And so just two, one is, as we're thinking about our planning, you know, we have utility industry looked at the past as a way of predicting the future. But in an era of climate change and extreme weather events that are getting more frequent, I'm not sure that that's appropriate anymore. We may need to be finding new ways to think about what the future is likely to look like based on climate models and other things that may actually look very different than what we've experienced in the past. Talking to a utility this week, their two largest storms in the company's history were this one and in 2017. In the last 4 or 5 years, their biggest storms in company history. And that's the future, I think, that we've got to be prepared for. And the other side of that coin is, as we're looking at the power grid to do more in terms of electrification of electric vehicles and transportation and building heating potentially and other ways of addressing some of the climate challenges, we've got to make sure that the grid is up to it. And the experiences of this last week show that we've got a ways to go. So there's a lot of work here. There's some good people working on it, but I think, you know, this has shown some of the vulnerabilities of the system that we've got to be thinking about and working to correct if we're going to make sure that the grid is not sort of the bottleneck of where we need to get to.
Dan Scripps is chair of Michigan's Public Service Commission. We've also been talking with Charlotte Jamieson of the Michigan Environmental Council and the Citizens Utility Board of Michigan. Charlotte, Dan, it's a real pleasure.
Thanks, April.
Thank you.